Okay, I'm on the line with John Jantz, and let's just dive in. John, you've come out in your latest book, The Ultimate Marketing Engine, and said, thinking in terms of marketing funnels is limiting my success as a marketer. What the heck do you mean by that?
Well, I think it's only limiting. I mean, there's no question we have to get people to know about us. Some smaller segment of them we have to certainly look at as ideal customers. But I think where it's limiting is when people stop, where they think that's the end. And for me, you know, I introduce in the book something I call the marketing hourglass, which basically takes that funnel shape, then adds another one turned upside down and says, hey, the real magic begins when we retain customers and we get repeat business with customers. And actually we turn customers, have such a great experience, we turn them into evangelists. The greatest source of leads for most businesses are their happy customers. And yet we don't, as marketers, sometimes focus on intentionally driving that part of the journey.
These are the proven direct response marketing, copywriting, and entrepreneurship success strategies you can use today to write your own ticket and create the life you want. I am Roy Furr, and this is Breakthrough Marketing Secrets. Now, here's today's breakthrough.
Okay, I have to admit that I agree with so much of that. And so let's talk more about that in the interview. I'm Roy Furr. This is Breakthrough Marketing Secrets. On the line here, I have John Jantz. He's a marketing consultant, speaker, and the author of a book that I've had for a very long time, Duct Tape Marketing, as well as the books, The Referral Engine, The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, and the one that caused me to reach out to him, his most recent book, The Ultimate Marketing Engine. He's also the founder of the Duct Tape Marketing Consultant Network, which trains and licenses independent consultants and agencies to use the duct tape methodology. And John, welcome. Thank you so much for being on Breakthrough Marketing Secrets today.
Well, thank you for being a longtime owner of Duct Tape Marketing.
Yes. Awesome. Well, let's dive in. The Ultimate Marketing Engine, you know, we know the world needs a million more marketing books. So what's the ultimate goal of the Ultimate Marketing Engine and what makes this particular approach different? And we can build on the intro or take it a different direction.
So I think the third sentence in the second paragraph is the ultimate marketing engine is a successful customer. And I think that that's a really overarching thread that runs through the book is that I'm suggesting that marketers focus a little less on transactions and a little more on the transformation that their best customers are seeking. And you may not sell the solution to that transformation today. And that's really what I suggest is that if we find those folks that we can deliver a tremendous amount of value to, let's understand where they want to go. I mean, a lot of times we are working with customers where they are today and solving the problem they have today. But what if we built our entire business around taking them from where they are to where they ultimately want to go? And I believe that that's the most elegant way to scale a business is to actually do more with those people that already trust us. So the book is broken down into five actual steps to achieve that. And if this marketing book is, you know, different in any way, I'm suggesting that many businesses, their goal should be to have customers for life.
That's so excellent. And I think that it speaks to, just such a big opportunity to move from that product focused business to a customer focused business, right? Mm-hmm. And I had in my notes here that we needed to talk about transactions versus transformations, and you've come out swinging. So you have a tool that you use for that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you've explained it as the customer success track. Right.
Yeah. And as I, you know, say that idea of transformations, people are like, yeah, okay, that's great. You know, fundamentally, I agree, but how? And so that's really what this tool is, the customer success track. The idea behind that is to identify the stage that most of your customers are in today. And most businesses I've worked with, they generally work with customers or businesses or individuals in a certain stage of life or a certain stage of business. And we know who they are. I mean, we can spot their characteristics. We know the challenges they're having in that stage. And if you're any good at all, you've kind of mapped out a process to how to get them out of that stage, how to solve that problem. And so what the customer success track suggests is, well, what's next? What's the next stage? And then what's the next stage? In my business, which is a marketing business, most people come to us because they don't have a marketing strategy. Their foundation of their marketing is is sloppy. I mean, they have a website, maybe, you know, somebody SEO'd it, maybe they have some content, maybe. And so they come to us really wanting a cohesive strategy and that foundation built. Now, actually, they come to us wanting leads, and what we have to tell them is no. The promise of moving out of this stage of getting the foundation built is that we can now get you to a point where these tools, the websites, and the things that you have invested in are actually going to generate leads, ideal customers. And then the next stage is now we can consistently convert those customers to high paying customers. So we have developed in my business, it's five stages that we can create a list of milestones and tasks that if we accomplish those, we are going to move a person to the next stage. So actually, if you get the book and you're interested at all in marketing, you're going to get my entire roadmap or blueprint for the customer success track for marketing. But my real goal in introducing this idea, and I've had some wonderful conversations with businesses that are applying this in some innovative and creative ways, is that I think almost any business can look at their customers this way and start really making that almost the mission of their business. And I think it becomes to take somebody from where they are to where they want to be, makes you invaluable to those customers. And I think that idea could become the overarching strategy for the business.
Yeah, well, it's excellent. And I do have to give you big credit here because honestly, for years with Breakthrough Marketing Secrets, like it started as kind of a side thing. I was doing a lot of copywriting, marketing client work. And then I started publishing daily and saying, okay, these are just my experiences, right? And I knew all along the way that I needed to define my audience, right? I needed to know who they were, but then I would run into things where I would have like the heads of, and this is literal, like a $1 billion direct response company reading my daily emails, as well as somebody who is like from a completely different country who's like brand new and discovering copywriting and excited about it, but like not sure, where to start. And I would have this audience that was super wide. And it was only in listening to you talk about the customer success track that I realized something that we talked about before I hit record, that my audience is copywriter entrepreneurs. And I was able to lay out five stages of the copywriter entrepreneur journey from just discovering copywriting and saying, oh, this is what you could do as a marketer, as a copywriter, yeah. Like that's what that is, all the way up to I've built a business where I understand copywriting and marketing, but now my role is as an entrepreneur, and maybe I do offer creation and strategy, and I'm creating this success track of what the copyright, awesome. And I know it because it's my success track too. Yeah. And I see the destination.
Yeah. And I'll be the first to admit that, I didn't wake up one day and say, I'm going to create this customer success track. I mean, I've been working on it for 20 years, but I ultimately realized that we had done it. We had it. It had really driven how my business has grown and scale and what we offer now and how we train and who we focus on. So I think that a lot of business owners who get this book might struggle with this concept, but I'm guessing that, or at least my experience tells me that many of them, even if they haven't called it this, they haven't documented it, they haven't even realized it exists, I'll bet it does.
Yeah. And what your book does so well is, I mean, it's a familiar concept, I suppose, that people are on a path, right, through life, but it brings this conscious awareness and intention and tools. Like when you buy the book, there's a bunch of tools that you can download that give you, that allow you to think through the process, right?
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, I mean, I didn't just research this and write a book. I mean, we do this every day, I mean, with clients. And so that's why we've made these tools available, because we've experienced them, we've tried them, we've tested them, we've proven that they help people get through the process. And I nothing pains me more. I mean, a book costs $12. You get one idea out of it, it was worth your $12. but nothing pains me more than people saying, oh, the book was really good, I didn't do anything with it though. I think that's why I put so much emphasis on building this tool set.
So how does this all relate to your concept of customers as members?
So it's really a point of view. I mean, I did spend a lot of time. I mean, that's where I introduced the customer success track, is this this idea of a point of view about thinking of your customers more as members. And I do spend a lot of time saying what I don't mean by that, which is, you know, I'm not talking about a membership or a subscription or Costco. You know, those are all great business models, but it's really more a point of view that if you think about a member in a truly healthy relationship, they join an organization because they believe in the cause, because they invest in themselves, because you know, they become to a point where they evangelize this. And so what if we thought about people joining our business as members instead of just being customers? And obviously, what would that mean we'd have to do? And that's really where the customer success track starts to come from, is that, you know, we have to figure out how to make them successful. Now, I spend a lot of time also in one of the steps saying you can't make everybody successful. And so there really is a key to making this work, is to understand who you bring value to, you know, who you can help the most, you know, who's the most profitable customer today for you, who already refers business to you. Those are some really good clues on how you might want to start narrowing your focus.
Yeah. So the way that I think of it is like, it's not members as in, oh, they're a member of my member site or whatever. Right. It's members as like customers, as family members. So like, how do you support a family, or like a member of my like adventure party? Like I'm thinking of like fantasy books and it's the members that are coming along for this journey, and how can we support the members and be a good guide?
And the way I like to talk about it is if you get that group right, if you figure out who they are, and I mean, some percentage of them today would do 10 times more business with you if you could then figure out another way to deliver value to them. And frankly, I've seen it. Some percentage of them would do 100 times more business with you. And that, you know, that's such a more practical, proven way to grow a business than going out and chasing the next new person who, you know, wants to, that you've got to convince to buy your thing.
Okay. So I feel like this is a little bit of a pivot to a different idea in the book, but I do want to make sure that we cover, you know, cover these various ideas. How has the way that we buy changed in the last few years, like as customers, and then how do we as marketers have to adapt?
Yeah. So there's so much made about, you know, this change in marketing. We've got to be on social media and our websites have to do this. And I think what a lot of people underestimate is the thing that's changed the most is, as you mentioned, the way people have the ability to become customers, how they choose to become customers. The, you know, the kind of linear customer journey of, you know, send out a message, you know, send out more message, drive somebody to buy, voila, loyal customer. I mean, that customer journey doesn't exist today. And really, in fact, some of or many of the ways in which somebody makes a decision about who they're going to do business with are actually out of our control. You think about the review sites, you think about, you know, the YouTube channel that somebody creates and talks about your business. I mean, those are things that we no longer really control. And in fact, in many businesses, probably most of the decision to buy or not buy from us happens without our knowledge. And I think that what that means for marketers is that we as marketers have to think less about creating demand and more about kind of organizing the trip or the behaviors that they want to go on. So yeah. I introduce in the book and really spend a lot of time unpacking something I call the marketing hourglass. And that marketing hourglass for us consists of 7 behaviors. They're know, like, trust, try, buy, repeat, and refer. And I contend that those are behaviors we all want to go through with the businesses that we find and ultimately engage. I mean, if we have a problem, we need to know who can solve it. We immediately turn to their website, and whether we say it intentionally or not, we're deciding, do I like what I see? I mean, it's that snap decision, right? And then, of course, once we sort of clear that hurdle, now we're thinking, who else likes them? You know, do they have case studies? Can I trust that what they're proposing, you know, is going to work for me? And then I think we all love it when we can try what it might be like to work, experience what it might be like to work with a business. And you know, everybody's familiar with the 30-day software trial, but hey, if you pick up a phone and call a business, you're trying them out, you know, whether you think that or not, you know, that's what's going on.
Well, even to interject, even this interview, I mean, it's people trying you, it's people trying me. It's like, this is another way that people try businesses, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, I think we all love to buy typically, but we've all been let down in instances where we bought. Buyer's remorse is a real thing. So, you know, what are we doing to intentionally keep that experience high, to get rid of buyer's remorse, you know, to have our transactions be frictionless, to onboard and to orient, you know, new customers. And then, of course, if I find somebody who solves my needs, I as a buyer, I don't go looking again, see if I can find a lower price necessarily. I mean, I love that convenience, right? I just go back to them. And then I think as human beings, we're wired to refer or at least talk about experiences that exceed our expectations. So the point of all that is, you know, what are we doing to intentionally guide people on that journey? We can't control the journey anymore. We can't decide what stage somebody is in that journey. But we certainly can intentionally start making, when they get to that guidepost, making that experience one that makes them want to go to the next step.
Yeah. Well, I'm specifically thinking about Amazon.com. And one of the things that they did very early on was the 5-star rating system. Sure, and they really pushed that hard, and that established the trust to the point that almost like, I know I personally don't really buy things that have less than a 4-star review on Amazon. Well,
that's very true of a lot of businesses. Yeah.
The other thing that's happened with that is that for all the bad press that Amazon gets, and I pay attention to at least some of it, I am in that repeat pattern with Amazon because they've created this situation of know, like, and trust, like everything from fast delivery to the product is going to match the reviews. The reviews are actually people who have used the product. And like, they have completely, I have a favorite headphones brand that got completely kicked off, and I'm wearing earbuds from them right now, got kicked off Amazon because when you got the headphones, they incentivized a 5-star review. Mm. And even though it's a great quality headphone, it's Amazon values the trust so highly. It was a huge brand for headphones, for low cost headphones on Amazon, but they kicked them off completely along with a couple other brands on the same day because of that trust factor. And they valued the trust of the customer experience. And so, like, how can we as marketers lean into that? Right.
Yeah. No question. I mean, I think for certain businesses, you know, I talk about these 7 stages. For a lot of businesses, trust is the most important one. It's it's the one that that allows you to attract that ideal customer, not that shopper, who's just looking for a deal. In certain industries, you won't, you imagine hiring an attorney that you think, well, they got 3-star reviews, but, you know, what the heck? How bad could it be? I mean, those things where we're going to turn over our personal financial life to somebody who's going to help us. I mean, trust is the number one thing to focus on. And yet most people still want to run an ad, put something out there and say, come buy from me.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you have the momentum of trust, especially in terms of online markers of trust, like Google reviews for a local business.
Yeah.
I know that that momentum becomes hard to upset. And it also becomes a huge tool for scale, because if you have a franchise business that you're able to open in a second location, a second city, you're almost instantly at the top of Google's local listings because you have that trust established in a different place.
Well, and it's not, obviously those are important elements, but I'll tell you the one that not enough people talk about is you can charge more. I mean, and that's really where I think you scale a business, is because people come to you expecting to pay a premium because, you know, everybody says you're great. And so that's the part that I don't think enough people pay attention to. 86% of, this is a recent PricewaterhouseCoopers statistic, 80% of consumers say they will pay more for a better experience. And yet so many marketers are out there working on their TikTok game. Maybe we ought to work on the experience that our existing customers are having when they come to us.
So with the marketing hourglass, we have this know, like, trust, try, and buy that leads to that initial transaction.
That's right.
And then the repeat and refer that creates all this momentum in our business. And that to me, like, a completely different way that you looked at this, that I think is fodder for good conversation, is in the book you created a profit matrix, right? To define your ideal customers and to allow you to focus on the best clients in like multiple dimensions. Can you explain that profit matrix a little bit?
Yeah. So one of the things, one of the steps, I essentially start out by saying you need to narrow your focus to the top 20% of your customers. Now, while that freaks some people out, I mean, we all kind of, even if we don't know it tangibly, we all kind of know that most of our best customers fit into a small segment of our business. I've seen businesses where 80% of their profit, the old 80-20, you know, principle, was made up in 20% of their customers. And yet we're listing the 14 other services we could offer to somebody someday, you know, that might buy it. And so my point in trying to get people to understand this is the first thing we actually ask them to do is to rank their customers by profitability. Now, if you've got 10,000 customers, you know, maybe it's groups of, you know, or product service offerings or segments, you know, but I've worked with a lot of folks that have 30 customers and they can pretty much put them on a spreadsheet and say, well, yeah, not only are these our best customers, why are we doing business, you know, with some of these things, you know, legacy services, it was a slow Monday, so I took a deal, you know, that kind of thing. It really helps them identify some obvious places where they should no longer be playing. Because one of the things I think that people really underestimate, and it's tough when you're just getting started, it's like, I'm taking anything, you know, I need customers and I'll figure it out. But over time, I think what people start underestimating is that dollar that shows up today that takes you, you know, $1, $2 or $1, $3 to actually fulfill. Not only is that, you know, really kind of false economy of, you know, scaling, it really robs you the opportunity cost of focusing on that client that would actually, as I said, do more business with you. So if we get rid of those ones that really are not good fits, they didn't have the right problem that we could solve, maybe even some of our detractors, you know, we're going to free up kind of some space and time and energy to look at those customers who are your most profitable, who already refer business to you, who you can actually look at and say, you know, a customer with these characteristics, we know we can get them the most value and we can do it fast. That combination to me is quite often overlooked. You know, a lot of times people look at a customer and say, gosh, what would be the opportunity for them? They're this size or they're this stage in their business. And so, you know, they buy a lot of XYZ. So let's go, you know, grab some of that share. But I think if we actually started narrowing our focus to clients that we can help the most, the fastest, that's the group that is going to be thrilled. They're going to get a great result. We got it for them quickly. So they probably had a great experience. And that's, you know, I think a lot of times people focus on what can we get from that client. And I think if we focused on who could we give a great experience to, because not everybody's a great fit. I mean, when somebody comes to us with certain attributes, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, Roy, when a business comes to us with certain attributes, I mean, I can almost instantly go, this is a no-brainer. This is a layup. I mean, we can help these guys and we'll help them quickly and they'll get some amazing results out of it. You know, whereas if somebody comes to us with certain elements that, you know, they want to be very DIY, they want to be very hands-on with their marketing, but yet they, you know, they really don't understand, you know, strategy. I mean, those kinds of characteristics, we know it's going to be kind of a grind. Yeah, we can probably help them. Yeah, they're willing to pay us, but they're not going to get the results we know are possible, you know, with other characteristics in place. And so that's really a great way. I think that shift can help a lot of people understand, you know, this idea of narrowing their focus is go after more people you can help quickly.
Yeah, I definitely have that experience, and I'm going through the list of, okay, this is my ideal client for that situation. This is my ideal client for that situation. And it hits all those same things. They're easier to work with. They pay more. They get great results. They get great. They have a great experience, a great outcome. And you know, they talk about me to other people and send more people who are like them to me, which is excellent.
I mean, I had somebody reach out the other day with a really big opportunity with a very large company that wanted us to do something that, it's not real. I mean, we could do it, you know, but it's not really in our scope. And so consequently, we're going to have to figure out how to do it. So there's always a lot of risk in that. Right. But then also, as you just mentioned, it's not work that, like, the value we got them was going to be okay, but it's not work that we know we've proven, you know, we can deliver a tremendous amount of value. So consequently, there's probably no lifetime value opportunities there. They're probably not going to refer us you know, to other people. So, you know, we said no, and it's, you know, you stick around long enough, you get better at saying no. But I think you have to at least start analyzing your opportunities based on some filter.
Yes, absolutely. And that's the danger of this like creative marketing service business, that it's very easy for us as marketers to say, yeah, I'll tackle that. Yeah. It's much harder to say, no, this is not a great fit. And so you're not going to have a stellar customer experience. Right. And so I should say no.
Exactly.
Well, I want to, so we've done a great job of talking about strategy and talking about like customer journeys and all of that. And at the same time, a lot of my subscribers are copywriters, are people who create marketing messages. They're creating it for their business, for client businesses. And one of the things that I totally loved about, like that jumped out at me about the Ultimate Marketing Engine was as soon as you started talking about the narrative about storytelling for marketers. And that's something that I teach as well. So one thing that just screamed at me is so spot on with my experience since 2005 is the core story of a business and really nailing down the core story. So can we talk through what that is and how that's so useful?
Yeah. So, you know, we could do this entire show on some of the topics around content, I think, for copywriters, frankly. But one of the things I wanted to introduce in this book, a lot of books, I mean, when I started talking about telling your story to business owners 20 years ago, they're like, hey, you're crazy. Nobody wants to hear my story. Obviously now, I mean, you can go in bookstores today and their entire, you know, bookshelves sections about, you know, storytelling in business today. You know, everybody's read Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey. I mean, everybody talks about it. So I wanted to bring something. I think it's a great framework. It's way better than talking about yourself and what you sell. But yeah. I wanted to bring something a little new to it. And so I introduced this idea of including narrative. I do think that one of the challenges with the story is it's told, if you think about a story, it starts and it ends. It's in chronological order of, you know, here's the events. You know, you think about somebody telling their company history, you know, or something as kind of a chronological story. But the idea of a good narrative is it takes the story and rearranges it in a way that really sucks somebody in. So we've all seen the movie that starts with a fiery car crash. You don't know what happens and cut away to, you know, the protagonist in seventh grade. I mean, we're immediately got to know, you know, what happened there, you know, what's going on. So it sucks us in. So if you think about that from a, you know, storytelling standpoint, most of our customers, well, all of our customers don't really want to buy what we sell. They want to have their problem solved. And I think that the idea behind a core story is it's your chance to tell how you're different in a way that addresses the future state, you know, that your customer wants to be in. They want to have that problem solved. What would it look like if they had that problem solved? First off, you get my problem. You understand it. You understand that it's not my fault, right? The world is against, you know, me, and that's why I have this problem. But oh, by the way, you know, we could get you to that future state with this solution or this approach. And so, you know, we're kind of rearranging the story in more of a narrative, but we're telling it as everybody is saying today, you know, where the customer themselves is kind of the hero, and we're really just the guide.
So one of the things that you're trying to do fairly early on in terms of defining the actual message as opposed to the strategy of the marketing is defining the problem that your business solves, identifying what you called on one of your worksheets, the outside forces that are driving the problem, which it's not my
That's
fault,
the enemy.
Right?
That's the enemy.
Yeah. painting a picture of what the customer's world looks like without the problem. Explaining the solution that there is a solution that exists, right? And I have that solution for you, and then a call to action. So like how do you then take what you've defined as a core story, which is more of like a brand document or an internal use document than an external presentation? How do you take that and then use that in content and specific marketing or advertising pieces?
Yeah, absolutely. So to me, that's homepage fodder, or that's maybe even an about us fodder. I mean, as you said, that's going to be the brand story. That's going to be the, you know, the key story that you're telling over and over and over again. maybe it gets reworked a little in parts of it or in a sales presentation as well. One of the things, though, that I think we have to do is we have to understand that not every single one of our customers or prospects has the exact same problem. And so we also need to really, we have to have that one that we're going to go with, because we don't want to, you know, necessarily, you know, convolute the message. So we want to go with that kind of core story that in some ways just gives somebody a sense of what we believe, and that you get me. That's what we're trying to get across there. But I also, you know, when we're talking about this problem solving thing, I have a whole matrix of problems that we solve, because, you know, I essentially sell marketing strategy, and nobody ever wakes up and says, I'm going to go buy some marketing strategy. But they do wake up and say, how come we can't charge what we're worth or what we think we're worth, you know, or how come when I look at Google, my top two competitors are always above me in the rankings. And so we have to actually understand, you know, all of those symptoms, and then be able to tie those back to, you know, the solutions, which, you know, that's a strategy problem, or that's an SEO problem, or that's a content problem. But the client doesn't go looking for strategy or even looking for content. You know, they just want the problem solved of, you know, how do I rank? How do I charge more? And that's what we really have to help them understand, that we get that.
It's like the time where I had an itchy stomach. This is when I lived in Oregon, and I'm like on the internet trying to self-diagnose. And I'm convinced by the time that I decide to book a doctor's appointment that I have shingles, and I get to the doctor and I come with my symptoms. And I'm like, here's the symptoms that I'm having. And she's like, no, Roy, you have allergies. We grow a lot of grass seed around here. It's the time of year where that bugs everybody. Yeah. And go take some allergy medicine and you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And so it was a matter of like, I'm coming with all these symptoms and I had this problem. And yeah, I mean, as the doctor, as a GP doctor, like she's able to just take those symptoms and say, no, here's the solution.
Well, and for your copywriter listeners, you know, I'm going to go back to the hourglass. I mean, one of the ways we use the hourglass, because let's face it, today, content plays a role in every stage in many cases. I mean, even after somebody becomes a customer, that's probably the greatest missed opportunity for a lot of content writers, is that, you know, part of the way we retain customers and sell them more is by, you know, using content to kind of continue their journey. But one of the things that, you know, that I really preach is that, you know, we probably need less content. It just needs to be more focused on an intention. And so one of the things that we certainly do is anytime we're talking about writing a piece of content, it has to tie to a stage of the customer journey. Where are we going to use that in the customer's journey? Because obviously their questions and certainly their objectives at each stage of the journey change dramatically. I mean, when we're first just trying to figure out, as you were going online, you know, you were searching forever. You didn't even know what your problem was. So you're just going out there searching for stuff. Oh, well, this seems to address it. Oh, they seem to be talking about it. And that's kind of, you have different questions and objectives. Once maybe you started narrowing in, you know, then, you know, maybe you started concluding, oh, I need to go talk to this kind of doctor. Well, you've got different questions and different objectives at that point. And then even after you became a client, I would make a case for saying that, you know, the post-treatment, if you will, you know, was a case where you had different questions and objectives and a different role of content there. So, you know, it really is. I mean, I do think that content production or creation is probably the biggest headache and cause of stress for most marketers. And it's because they're basically just saying, what should we write today?
Yeah. So instead, you explain how to use it as an intentional strategic tool,
if you basically peg it to this is going to be used in this stage of the customer journey, well then it will have some value, you know, at some point. Whereas if you just write another blog post and put it out there in the ether, who knows?
And depending on the structure of your business, your marketing, your sales team, it can become a resource. I mean, I work with a lot of direct response companies where it's just like copywriting this now, right? But in the past, I worked as part of a sales team where we were using marketing and marketing assets to actually move people through the sales process.
That's right.
Okay, so one last topic that I want to cover before we wrap up here. You do a great job of explaining how you use customer interviews to actually start to nail these stories and to pull out content, pull out talking points, pull out language to use.
Yeah.
So how do you, as your team, who's maybe coming into a business or a market where you don't have a natural message that you can just espouse, how do you use customer interviews to get all of that?
Well, so, you know, one of the things we started doing is, you know, we wanted to ask businesses, you know, how are you different? What's your key, you know, core difference? Because we're going to use that as a message. And I quickly, this is many, many years ago, I quickly found out they don't know. They have no idea, you know, how they're different in most cases. In fact, that's why they're hiring you. And so we started this process of taking 8 to 10 of their ideal clients and asking them very simple questions. You know, first off, how'd you find them in the first place? Why'd you hire them? Why do you stick with them? What do they do that others don't? I mean, pretty bland, you know, inane questions to get the conversation going. Now, when we ask those questions, of course, we say, what do they do that others don't? They say, well, they provide great service. And obviously, we all know that's not very useful. And so then the follow-up is, tell me a story about a time they provided great service. And then we start to hear the magic. Because when people start telling stories about what you did differently, and frankly, 5-star reviews, they're doing the exact same thing. They are going there and saying, I was surprised. I got more than I expected. They did X. It's never, an example I use in the book is a tree service. You know, nobody goes there and says, they were great. They cut my tree down just perfectly. But they do go there and say, they showed up when they said they were going to, and they cleaned up the job site. You know, I couldn't even tell they were there. And those are the problems that we're actually solving for people. That's the stuff they're not getting from everybody else. Even though we know it's not true, the belief is anybody with a truck and a chainsaw can cut a tree down. So how do we differentiate ourselves? We differentiate ourselves by having our, you know, 100% guaranteed on time for appointment, or, you know, we give you a discount. We have our 27-point, you know, clean up the job site checklist, because that's the stuff that they care about. That's the stuff they're not getting from anyone else. So we find those stories in the interviews, and we find those stories increasingly in 5-star Google reviews for companies, because you know, it's in their language. It's got emotion in some cases, you know, rather than us talking about, you know, we're 27-year arborists and have every degree under the sun.
Yeah. It's what I call three-dimensional storytelling, where instead of saying, oh, this company has great service, which is just platitudes, right? It's just saying something. It's somebody actually telling like a in-person experience. And oftentimes people have that there behind whatever they're saying, whatever platitudes come out, they have that there. You just have to be willing to ask that follow-up question.
Yeah. And exactly. And then be quiet. You know, all you say after that is, tell me more about that.
Be a good active listener.
Yeah. And it's not just, I mean, obviously we actually develop entire core messages above the fold on the website, you know, out of these interviews, but we also use them for blog post ideas. We use them for subject lines for emails, because, you know, people are talking about the real problems that we as companies solve.
Yeah. Going all the way back to the Robert Collier letter book, a very old classic, enter the conversation already going on in their heads. Well, ask them what that conversation is. Exactly. That's awesome. Well, I highly recommend The Ultimate Marketing Engine as just a great book on marketing strategy and messaging and everything we've talked about here. Of course, folks can go to theultimatemarketingengine.com. And you have the first couple chapters available.
Yeah, for download. Kind of the typical stuff. You can find out a lot more about the book, and as you said, kind of get a sample of it. It's the ultimate try.
Yeah, awesome. So I'll include a link there. You can also get it through Amazon or wherever, you know, good marketing books are sold. And I will recommend, like many good books published today, when you start to read it, check out the additional resources that are available to you as a buyer, because you have put a lot of work, your team has put a lot of work into, your team, whoever, has put a lot of work into sharing additional resources that actually make the whole book actionable and not just intellectual entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Awesome. So check out the links in the description. I'm Roy Furr. This is Breakthrough Marketing Secrets with John Jantz of Duct Tape Marketing fame and now The Ultimate Marketing Engine. Great book. Check it out. And thank you to everybody who's been with us for this interview. And thank you, John, for your insights here.
Thanks so much, Roy.
Thank you once again for tuning in to this daily episode of Breakthrough Marketing Secrets. Remember, check out the links with this episode for even more value. Now make sure you like, comment, share, subscribe, and engage in every way you can to keep this show going and growing and delivering daily value to you. I'll catch you soon for your next big breakthrough.